Are you ready for the entertainment experience of a lifetime? Knockdown, Dragout, hard-hitting conversations, debates, and interviews. Well, if you said yes to any of these questions, sit back, relax, and enjoy something like no other. This is the Isolation Series Podcast, presented by the Scott Robles team at Douglas Elliman Real Estate, by WellbeingsPerformance.com for all your online meeting needs, by Barbarian Steakhouse, Canada's premier upscale restaurant. For more information, go to Barbarians.com. By ImprintPilates.com Toronto and the Greater Toronto Area's premier Pilates studio. And by the Toronto Immune and Digestive Health Institute. For more information, go to TIDHI.ca. Here now is your host, Spencer Miller.
Hey guys, and welcome to this Wednesday Hump Day edition of the Isolation Series with me, Spencer Miller. Very pleased to be joined as always by my co-host and partner in crime in this little thing we like to refer to as the Isolation Series. And of course, I'm referring to the one and only man bun enthusiast himself, Paul Shields. And Paul, this is episode 198 as we march closer to the milestone episode 200 that is taking place later this week. But I would be remiss if we did not start episode 198 in the Bronx, New York, as the New York Yankees were taking on the Pittsburgh Pirates last night. And for the majority of the game, the Yankees looked listless and were down 8-4 going into the ninth inning, where magic started to happen yet again as Aaron Judge continued his march to his own history and immortality in baseball as he hit his 60th home run of the season for the Yankees. That closed the gap to 8-5 at the time, but it reinvigorated the dugout so much that they proceeded to load the bases after the 60th home run, and then had a very dramatic walk-off grand slam hit by Giancarlo Stanton. And once again, it goes to show you that when Giancarlo Stanton is healthy, nobody can rival him in terms of exit velocity off of the bat. He hit that grand slam home run for the Yankees in walk-off fashion at 118.5 miles an hour off the bat, and it exited the stadium at 2.96 seconds flat. It was unbelievable. The Jays did what they needed to do in Philadelphia by winning a very sloppy game, 18-11 last night. We thought that it was going to be 4.5 in the race for the division going into tonight's game. And then somehow, on the back of Aaron Judge, once again, like I said, the Yankees find a way to win, and it's still 5.5.
Yeah, it's, I'm of two minds. Of course, being a Jays fan and, you know, growing up with the dreaded Yankees and the Red Sox in the division, it's always hard. I find it hard to ever cheer for the Yankees. However, Aaron Judge, there's something about this race to the home run, the AL home run record, that is just so captivating. It sort of supersedes, you know, rivalry and this and that. Like, it's hard not to just marvel at how good he has been all year. So, you know, in a perfect world, Judge hits a home run and the Yankees still lose, but certainly very dramatic with, yeah, an absolute no doubter from Giancarlo Stanton, as you mentioned. You know, we are lucky enough to watch Vladimir Guerrero Jr. here in Toronto on a regular basis, and to see the exit velocity that he hits at is just amazing. And Stanton's a guy that's absolutely on that level, where there are some balls that just explode off his bat and there's no other way to put it. So really intriguing night of baseball. As far as the Blue Jays game goes, I had that sort of rocking on my list here. That was a rare dud by Ross Stripling. We really haven't seen that very much this year. So, you know, good night to have a dud when your team scores 18 runs. So I think you just take that win, you erase the portion of the game film that you don't like, and maybe you keep that Jackie Bradley Jr. home run loaded up for some motivation, as it appeared the dugout was pretty excited when he got one. But I think there's not a whole lot to take from that game other than, you know, that game feels a lot like the 28-run game a couple months ago.
Would you also say, though, that the reason Ross Stripling and the Blue Jays were able to get out of that game last night with a win is largely based on the fact that Philadelphia kept giving the Blue Jays gift after gift after gift after gift in terms of, you know, poor fielding, losing a easy pop fly off of the bat of Danny Jansen, bad base running by Bryce Harper and some other things. Obviously, you know, that's not the whole story. We know that. But if you watch the game, it had to have been one of the sloppiest baseball games I've seen all year by one team.
Sure, but I mean, the Jays were maybe not equally as sloppy, but damn close, right? Like there's errors that extend innings that cost runs. There's, you know, just not, they weren't a pristine ball club last night either. So I don't think there's a whole lot. Again, you're going to have games like that, right? Some games get out of hand. And sometimes that means winning by a lot. Sometimes that means losing by a lot. In this case, it meant everybody doing all their best impressions of the wrong way to play baseball videos. So I don't think it can be spun that like the Phillies lost that game, but the Blue Jays didn't grab the game by the throat either, right? Their hitting was very good. They managed to put up 18 runs, but you know, they had to score. They would have needed a minimum of 12 to win the way they played. And I'm going to guess that most managers in Major League Baseball don't want to have to win 12 or score 12 runs a game. So again, with that one, I think you burn the game footage. You're glad you leave with the win because you did what you have to do. Now you're still on pace to continue winning series, which is what they need, right? Their magic number as of today is down to 8. They need, you know, 8 wins and, you know, I guess 8, a total of 8 wins or 8 losses from the Orioles to clinch their playoff spot. So we are really getting down to the wire here. And they've done their part. They have to continue to do that. But other than that, I don't think there's too much to take from the game.
Okay. Any other baseball comments before we move on here, my friend?
No, the couple things that I had written down, Spence, you went to right away. As a true professional that you are, you knocked those off the list early.
Now, switching gears, I want to talk about a little bit of NHL news that came down yesterday. First, we saw a couple of ends of careers. We saw Zdeno Chara, after 24 seasons, finally hang him up and sign a one-day contract, with the Boston Bruins to announce his retirement as a Bruin. He had quite the career and was a captain for a lot of great teams in Boston, and it still makes me laugh that Eugene Melnyk and that ownership had a choice between Wade Redden and a young Zdeno Chara, and they decided to go with Wade Redden, and we all know how that turned out for them. So there's that, and also more surprisingly, a little bit on my end at least, and I want to get your thoughts on it as well, is PK Subban did not find the right fit for himself. And we know that he is a very multiversed individual and has a lot of different interests and things like that. But at the age of 33, he's decided to hang him up. We know that he's had a lot of back injuries since coming to Nashville after starting his career great in Montreal, where it culminated winning one Norris Trophy as well. So what do you take away from two announcements of retirements yesterday?
Well, I'm going to just add a third name in there that I think is not maybe getting quite enough love. And that's Keith Yandel, also announced his retirement. Tough to announce your retirement next to, you know, one of the biggest presence, one of the best captains in the league for the last 20 years in Chara. And then one of the loudest personalities maybe in NHL history in PK Subban. But, you know, I think there needs to be some love thrown towards the current NHL Ironman, Keith Yandel, who had some very effective years, played in some pretty important moments and played more than anyone else consecutively. So just want to throw his name in there as well. As far as PK and Zdeno Chara goes, you know, Zdeno Chara, we all look back on that Ottawa decision to sign Redden versus signing Chara. If you look back, you know, Wade Redden was an elite defenseman at the top of his game, and Ottawa had to make a really hard choice. In hindsight, they made the wrong one, right? You know, Chara goes on to do what he does. But where I would be pissed off is if I were a New York Islanders fan, when you look at the fact that you could have had Zdeno Chara and Jason Spezza, they traded away for Yashin.
And Roberto Luongo.
Well, Roberto Luongo was traded before that. So you had Luongo, you had McCabe, you had Chara, you had Spezza, you had Brian Berard. Like, those are five players that had pretty darn good NHL careers that just gone, right? Like, I mean, Luongo's a Hall of Famer. Chara will be a Hall of Famer. Brian McCabe was, you know, part of a bunch of really good teams in Toronto. It's just, I find it funny that, you know, the Senators, I'm a Leaf fan, so I don't send a whole lot of love towards the Senators very often, but I don't even think that they were the ones that made the worst, you know, roster decision when it comes to Zdeno Chara. Chara was a menace to play against. He was just the ability that he had to control a game is something I don't think we're going to see. And I think people often forget just how hard he had to work to become a good skater at the NHL level. We're talking about a guy that in his junior years or in his first years, you know, you were wondering if he was going to be able to figure it out with that skating. And, you know, although I wouldn't say he was, you know, the most graceful skater, he was an effective NHL player for a long time and captained a lot of very good Boston teams. So a lot of credit to him. As far as PK goes, I don't think we're ever going to see. I think, like, PK Subban has the potential in my mind to be the, you know, Charles Barkley of the NHL, of any NHL broadcast. He's got the personality. He's got the knowledge of the game. He's willing to say, you know, things that maybe people don't want to say. He's got a lot of charisma, a lot of confidence. So I am so excited to see that type of energy injected into NHL broadcast, into NHL storytelling. I think it's desperately needed. And I am really excited for what life after the NHL might look like for PK Subban. I was pretty surprised. You know, he's a young guy, but he has been battling some back issues for the last couple seasons. And I, like you said, I think there's a lot to come. I think we haven't heard the last of PK Subban by any stretch.
On the flip side, I want to get your thoughts quickly on a couple of other interesting announcements by the NHL. Joe Sakic and the management team of the Colorado Avalanche have locked up their cornerstone in Nathan MacKinnon on an 8-year, $100.8 million contract over the next decade. Like I said, or pretty much the next decade, he is 27 years old, so this will take him through his age 36 season, I believe. We all know that these long contracts have not really worked out overall, and we know that the NHL wanted to sort of mitigate that, like with the Ryan Suter 12-year contract and some of the other really, really long contracts. Rick DiPietro with the Islanders, that didn't work out all those years ago as well. So instead of signing somebody to a 12-year or 13-year contract, they're capped at 8 now. And I believe that this is an absolutely perfect contract, somewhat undervalued contract, in my opinion, in comparison to some other sports, for an elite player and a great gentleman of the game in Nathan MacKinnon. And it just goes to show you that not only is Joe Sakic a Hall of Fame hockey player, but he's turning out to be a pretty darn good Hall of Fame level executive since he's moved to the front office.
Yeah. First and foremost, I think the deal makes a ton of sense, right? I think that I had in my mind that MacKinnon was probably signing something that started at 13, right? I think that being the highest paid player in the league, I think is of some importance, particularly when you're in that stratosphere, right? I think we'll be having a similar conversation next offseason when it comes to Auston Matthews, right? I think he will become the highest paid player. But the fact that you got Nathan MacKinnon, who is a very good skater, who keeps himself in incredible shape, who's also, you know, best friends with Sidney Crosby, who's done an amazing job of being an elite player his entire NHL career. 8 years at 12.7 per year looks like a absolute steal. Obviously congratulations to Nathan MacKinnon, but I agree. I think Sakic, I think that Nathan MacKinnon and his team could have put nearly any number they wanted up to that 20% of the cap mark that, you know, the NHL CBA is topped out at per player, for one player, excuse me. So he probably could have put, I think that would have put him in the range of like 13.9 or something, you know, somebody fact check my math, doesn't really matter. But as the cap starts to go up, after next year, after the year after that, when this deal is in the middle of the deal, that's going to be an absolute bargain for who I think is one of the top five players in the league.
Yes, they put up a statistic on SportsCenter that made me laugh, because this deal does not kick in until next season, I believe. So going into this year, Nathan MacKinnon is still the 104th highest paid player in the NHL, right behind Sean Monahan of all people.
Well, he's making 6.5 per right now. This is his last year at 6.5. So you just think about like the output versus the contract. He could have really raked Colorado over the coals here, right? He could have wanted every dollar back that he didn't earn in that contract that he signed previously. But I think it shows the character of a guy like Nathan MacKinnon and the idea that he wants to continue to surround himself with players who give him a chance to win, right? Oftentimes guys who win once aren't satisfied. They want to win again. So I think it's pretty exciting for Colorado Avalanche fans. And yeah, I think Joe Sakic did a really nice job here to get this player on a deal that I think in, you know, 2 or 3 years time, we're going to be calling this a discount.
On the flip side, you mentioned Auston Matthews. That's where I was going to go to get your thoughts next. And that is, he talked about yesterday not talking contract and focusing on this year. And that's rightfully so in some respects, because you want to try to not be a distraction to your team as much as possible. He will inevitably get the contract questions throughout the year. I believe a player of his level normally gets, no matter what you say at the beginning of the season. But I'm a little worried based on the money that they gave to John Tavares and that they gave to William Nylander and that they have already given to Auston Matthews, that the Leafs, although they are one of the richest franchises in all of sports, will not have enough capital heading into next offseason to pay Auston Matthews what he's going to be asking. That's for.
Completely narrative driven. The Maple Leafs, as of next season, even this season, are in pretty good cap shape if you look around the league compared to what other teams. So yes, the Leafs made a decision that other teams haven't made. They paid, you know, three players at or near $11 million, which, you know, people can argue about the logistics of that till they're blue in the face. But the reality is, if Auston Matthews is willing to sign here, he can put any number up to that 20% on the cap, and the Leafs need to sign it. He could be the second best player in the world. There's an argument to be made that he's the best player in the world. I think that he's a better player than Nathan MacKinnon from a talent standpoint, from an age standpoint. That's my opinion. And I know there's others that share that. And there's others that would argue MacKinnon. That's all well and good. You're talking about the best players in the league. We're not talking about William Nylander. With all respect to William Nylander, I think now we know what he is, right? He is a player scores goals, that has a value.
He's right? $7 million, not $11 million. We know that
now. No, but his $7 million, whatever it was 5 years ago when he signed that deal, will be $9 million. And that's probably about right. Auston Matthews is whatever Auston Matthews is willing to play for. So if I'm Austin Matthews, again, it probably starts with a 13. It might even creep up to a 14, but it's a lot different paying that per year to a player when your salary cap is 90 or 92 million versus, you know, 83 million, right? Which is what we've been sort of dealing with the cap situation. But Matthews said today, he loves playing in Toronto. He now considers it home. You have to take that at face value. He's a unique guy. You know, the contract that he signed had some unique quirks to it to begin with. I think that as of July 1 next season, we're talking about an 8-year extension for Austin Matthews to be the cornerstone of this team forever. I have zero concern about what that number looks like, because honestly, it doesn't matter. You know, Connor McDavid's going to be the same when his deal comes up in Edmonton. You know, look at Kale McCarr will be the same when his deal comes up. You just do not step away from the best players on the planet. It's just the way that it goes.
What do you do with Mitch Marner when his contract comes up, if you're the Maple Leafs?
Do everything you can to sign him too. The same, again, Draisaitl, McDavid, Marner, Matthews. You do what you need to do to sign those players. Because there's only a handful of players who I would say I would much rather have Austin Matthews at, let's pick a ridiculous number. I'd rather have Austin Matthews
14-5.
Sure. I was going to say 16. I'd rather have Austin Matthews at $16 million than two $8 million players. I'd rather have Mitch Marner at $13 million than two $6 million players, or four $3 million players, or whatever math you want to do. And I know there are people out there who don't agree with that, and that's fine. But you just, like, again, the reason that William Nylander hasn't been traded is because trading William Nylander almost guarantees that you trade the better player in the deal and get something worse back. Now, you might want to change your dynamic, your culture, your this, your that. You can make all those arguments. But there's a reason that these players are the core here, right? I get so frustrated with the idea of like, oh, you know, Mitch Marner's not a top five winger in the league. The guy put up nearly 100 points last year. He is an absolute wizard. He's going to get a good deal. He's probably not going to get anything like the last deal. The argument could be made that Mitch Marner and Austin Matthews were at a similar level. Austin Matthews has now separated himself from nearly everyone in the game, except for a handful of other players. Mitch Marner is in the tier, in that next tier, right? He is such an excellent player, but you know, you're not going to have to compete with, I don't think, the number that you give Matthews. That, like, of course, if I'm Austin Matthews, or excuse me, I'm by Mitch Marner's camp, I'm going to push for every dollar I can get. But again, you know, what is it worth to keep that player? What's a good value? But again, I think he's great. I would keep him. I'd do everything I could to keep him.
In the words of the immortal me, only time will tell, my friends. Only time will tell. I also want to get your thoughts on a couple of very interesting things throughout the world of combat sports that have come down the wire in the last few hours, and that is Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor are once again discussing a rematch from their highly anticipated bout that they had all the way back, I believe it was in 2018. If memory serves, maybe you can ask Uncle Google. It was August, either 2018 or 2017. Can't quite remember. To me, this doesn't interest me at all whatsoever now, because the shine to me, as I've said on this program before, is off Conor McGregor. He hasn't really done anything of consequence inside an octagon or in a fighting standpoint since prior to the first Mayweather fight. Yes, we have talked at length about how he changed the game for fighters in terms of being able to cross over and now get the ridiculous payday that he's able to get with pretty much everything he does. But this does not interest me at all, and I just want to get your thoughts quickly on that.
Yeah, I would say I'm similar to you. I have no thoughts. I care so little, I'm really not even going to go back and look at the fight. I was really into the first one. I was excited to see. I think you're right. I think it was 2017. But like, boxing in general doesn't really spark my fire anymore. And watching a retired boxer who I think near the end of his career was more concerned about making money and solidifying his, you know, record versus actually fighting good fighters versus a non-boxer who's having his, what, this is a second professional boxing fight. Like, you know, McGregor and Mayweather, they've talked, maybe they'll be able to sell the fight, but I just don't know that I'm the target audience for this because I truly don't care.
You and I agree on that right there. And I also want to get your thoughts. It was just announced that the UFC is making history, signing a 17-year-old to a contract. And it kind of bothers me a little bit because we know that Kobe joined right out of high school in the NBA, and some other people have done that over the years, Darius Miles and things like that. But it's a whole other beast when you're talking about combat sports and mixed martial arts. He must be very, very talented, and I'm not taking anything away from him on that sense. But, you know, for me, you got to let him grow still, and you got to let him at least wait until he's 19, 20 years old, 21 years old, because that's when we saw the prodigy BJ Penn start his career and things like that. And it just doesn't feel right to me to let him join the biggest promotion in the world with a very interesting, you know, promoter, to say the least, in Dana White and different things like that. I don't want to put a 17-year-old kid in harm's way like that yet.
Yeah, I mean, but he's made the choice, and obviously the people that are in his camp, whether it's family, you know, friends, advisors, managers, whatever it might be, they believe it's the right move for him. He can obviously hold his own. And you know what, if we you wouldn't say that LeBron James should have stayed in, you know, college, or should have gone to college basketball. You wouldn't say Connor McDavid needed more time in junior. You wouldn't say Austin Matthews really needed to hone his craft in Switzerland for another year. Right. Like, and I understand they're a little bit older. I understand we're talking about like 18 and 19 year olds versus a 17 year old, but there's always these exceptions to the rule, or exceptions that prove the rule, right? There's going to be these outliers.
That, like that new Bedard kid who's going to be in the NHL.
Yeah, Bedard looks like he's going to be really good. But again, we don't know until he actually shows up, right? So right now we're in the anticipation phase. We don't really know what this kid is at the highest level. We know that at the chances he's had to shine in the developmental build to this moment have been very good and very favorable. And he looks like a prodigy, right? So I don't have a problem with it. I would have more of a problem with it if we were seeing, if the norm was now that we were recruiting 17-year-old fighters to get their head knocked in by, you know, 30-year-old men. I might be a little more concerned about that, but having one outlier that has put in the work and it shows that he's above and beyond where, you know, anyone else his age is at, and even anyone else, you know, 2, 3, 4 years older than him is, I don't have as much of a problem with that. Of course, you could talk about the morality issues around Dana White and some of the things that UFC does in general. I feel like that's a totally different conversation. I don't think it has anything to do with this fighter and the skill that he's shown to get to this level.
Again, my favorite phrase, only time will tell, ladies and gentlemen, but this is a perfect way to end this Wednesday 198 edition of the Isolation Series. Me, Spencer Miller, very pleased once again to be joined by Paul Shields, and we look forward to coming at you again with another fantastic episode as we march to the milestone 200 again tomorrow. But we'll see you again tomorrow. Until then, take care of yourselves, and we'll talk to you very, very soon. And Paul, please tell people all about some more whole grain goodness that is us.
Folks, be sure to check us out on podbean.com by going to theisolationseries.podbean.com. There you'll find the audio-only versions of the podcast, including all of our past amazing interviews. One more time, that's theisolationseries.podbean.com. And hey, don't forget to follow us on Instagram. It's at @thespencermiller and at Pauly Shields, Pauly spelled P-A-W-L-Y. So find us on podbean.com, follow us on Instagram, and don't forget to like, share, and subscribe.
And once again, everybody, thank you for watching and or listening and supporting this thing we like to call the Isolation Series. For Paul Shields, I am Spencer Miller, and we will see you again very, very soon. Bye-bye.